G'day expats, welcome to another episode of Expat Chat, episode 11 today, Brett, if that's correct.
That's correct, we're well into the, or not well into the double digits, but we're in the double digits anyway. And
yeah, we are.
Given the time of the month and the time of the year, I'd say this will be our last one before we all break up for Christmas break.
That's right, and I mean, you're briefly just telling me about, how prevalent and how big it is over in the UAE. I mean, in terms of Christmas, I mean, I know right now when I drive around on the Gold Coast, where I'm lucky enough to be based, there's Christmas decorations everywhere, even in my street where I'm living, you know, that everyone's opting into putting up the solar lights and everything like that and getting right into it. How is it over on the Emirates side?
Look, in Dubai, Christmas is, against probably what popular opinion is, Christmas is huge here. So much so, Christmas trees everywhere. I was in a nativity, I guess, function event, you know, that was in the middle of the desert on the weekend.
Yep.
Three wise men, you know, camels and everything. So it was actually quite apt. it's huge. It's something that it's not only just a Western thing, but even, you know, local Emiratis get into it. It's a really big thing, and it's nice to see. It's something that you're always conscious of when you're moving kids overseas. Are they going to miss out on Christmas? Not the case.
No, that's right. And I mean, how's your morning kicked off, this morning? What's your routine been like?
Yeah, look, I mean, as you know, we've got an office in Australia, so virtually it's wake up, get a coffee into you, and look at the 85 emails sitting in your inbox waiting for you, which is always interesting. And it's probably the problem we have with having clients in, you know, pretty much every time zone around the world. You know, there's always a client on the emails or some sort of communication going on. So it's something that it's the morning's always hectic because you're sort of managing your time, you know, what's urgent, what needs to be done before you guys close up business for the day.
That's right.
But then also getting ready for our day ahead and leading into, you know, Europe waking up and clients coming in through there. So, it's a very fluid type of morning, I guess, is the best way to describe it. It's something that you wake up and you never know what's going to be there. You're obviously picking up what the markets did overnight, and also too, you know, probably just touching on the key points that clients want to resolve, you know, before they, you know, break up for Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, speaking of markets, I just saw today the ASX, it's had, I think, a huge day. I think they said the best day since the election. So there you go. Obviously, look, some positive news.
The Christmas rally is always a, I wouldn't say given, but just a bit of a fun fact. As you know, we like to always segue off into very different areas here against script. you know, the Christmas rally, just for those people at home and listening and watching, wonder why this same thing happens every year. And it's quite a simple phenomena. Essentially what it is the banks, the top three banks, so ANZ, NAB and Westpac, all pay their dividends this time of year. And there's about $15 to $16 billion worth of dividends that get paid out to investors today or around this sort of same time every year. And essentially what happens is for mum and dad investors, that goes in their bank account. But if you put your fund manager hat on for a second, suddenly their account is awash with cash. Now, the senior fund managers, they're in Vail, Colorado, Europe skiing. So it's the junior burgers who are managing the portfolios back at home in Australia over the Christmas break.
Yes.
They have a strict mandate that tells them, you know, how they manage their money, how much cash they can hold, and so on and so forth. So essentially what happens is you're the junior guy in an empty office managing the portfolio while your bosses are away overseas having a great time. And what happens is they don't have the decision to make new investments. They've just got to keep re-indexing or re-weighting the portfolio based on the mandate. So all they do is they take the cash that comes in today, tomorrow, yesterday, and just redeploy it in the market to maintain their weight. So that's essentially why we get a Christmas rally every year.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, that's probably something that we see as well when it comes over to January, that January effect as well, where there's that cyclical uplift in markets as well.
Look, it is. There's a lot of, you know, hype and not hype. There's a lot of conjecture about January determines the course of the markets for the year. In Australia, not so, because let's be honest, most people are away on holidays until Australia Day. including yep. a lot of the people in the financial services community, fund managers and the like. So mm-hmm. it's something that, yes, US would dictate some of that, but in Australia, not so much.
Yeah, okay. Well, Brett, let's kickstart today's episode with, I suppose, today's itinerary.
Yep.
Now, today, obviously, touching base again on the main residence exemption and a critical update on that one. The next item I want to discuss briefly is what is the foreign resident capital gains withholding tax, because it is going to impact a lot of Australians now. Contributing to super as a non-resident, foreign super transfers, as well as just touching base on six-month rule there, foreign pensions and what a UPP deduction is. I'm not sure if many people know what that is. I'll be impressed if they have. And lastly, just some top three tips from yourself when first moving overseas and becoming an expat. So that's on today's agenda. But first, I might get you to do that little disclaimer that we need.
Yes, any information that you derive from us, whether it be from watching, listening, osmosis, ESP, should be taken as entertainment only and should not be construed as financial advice. Please seek a professional to receive your own personal financial advice.
Absolutely, that's right. Now, let's jump straight into it. Main residence exemption. Okay, now, as we all know, we've been following this very closely since day dot 2017, since it was
announced. Almost sick of talking about it.
I know, and I'll be honest, I'm not sure how much longer we can talk about it, just because it's sort of the same old song and dance now. But, I mean, huge update, obviously, in the last week or two, as we know. Anyone that's been following us, our expat chats, knows that we're constantly talking about it and giving updates, but now the critical one has come through. What is that one?
Royal Assent went through. So on the 12th of December, yep. the Governor General signed off and the legislation was put into place. So no more banging on about it, no more trying to stop it. It's here to stay. So yep. unless the government brings out legislation that removes it or changes it, it's now the new nexus for Australian expats to consider. So those people already overseas, 30 June 2020 is the big red mark on the calendar.
Yep, I mean, and obviously a lot of expats will be conceding their options, whether to sell the property pre that date, as always, you know, settlement can take place after that date, but sale of contract needs to be signed before 30 June 2020. That's crystal clear, especially in the legislation. And then, I mean, expats need to decide whether they sell, whether they hold and just don't sell until they come back, because obviously the key items within the legislation is what is technically your residency status at that point in time when you sign that contract? Non-resident?
That's right.
Okay, you're going to pay a huge amount of tax. And as an example, I mean, I did a brief calculation for a client who has chosen to sell, which will remain nameless, but they bought their property in 1994 in Sydney for $400,000.
Wow.
They're going to go to auction. Yeah, I know. I was shocked. I nearly fell off my chair. They're going to go to auction early next year, and they're looking, I suppose the real estate agents have given them a rough estimate of 3.5. Now, I know. When I heard that, that's when I did fall off my chair. But I did a calculation for them based on them selling it 30th of June. If they sold it before that date, no CGT. If they sold it and the contract was signed on 1st of July, more than $650,000 in capital gains tax.
Wow.
So there you go.
Go some way to plug the budget gap they were talking about in the media today about Mr. Frydenberg not quite hitting his numbers on the budget. So yeah, let's hope we contribute to that demise of the budget by, you know, ensuring that no expats get caught up in this.
No, that's right. And it's just, you know, it's a sad day, to be honest. And it's just, you know, the amount of, I suppose, lobbyist groups that were going against this, and they just haven't been heard. Obviously, it's been put back and put back and put back, and now we only have 6 and a bit months to make a decision. It's alarming. Well,
you know, I think that, you know, from our point of view, we're now gone from trying to stop it to now just getting out there and getting loud for the next 6 months to make sure that every expat is aware of this. You know, we're not saying yes. sell or don't sell, but just be mindful of the repercussions that could happen should you decide to sell, you know,
yep.
post-July as yep. a non-resident. What we'll be putting up on our website today is we're going to be running mm-hmm. Two live webinars on the 14th of January to really yep. just get out there and get every expat to understand and learn about these sort of things.
Correct.
So we'll be running one 10 a.m. Queensland time, which will cover those in Asia who are getting up early for the day, you know, whether it's in Singapore, it's 8 a.m. Or Thailand, 7 a.m. or China and Hong Kong, the same thing. And then also one at 3 p.m. Dubai time, which will cover off on those in the subcontinent, Middle East, and also Europe and UK as well too. So I'll put it in the show notes below. If you are listening to this on a podcast, you can go to our website, atlaswealth.com. Go to the webinar section and you'll see two of the timings there. Please go and RSVP your spot, and we'll put a lot of effort and emphasis into providing as much value as we can in those live webinars.
Absolutely. And this feeds into the next topic that I did want to go over today, and it's this foreign resident capital gains withholding tax. Now, a lot of people, when they hear what it is, they naturally think, okay, I'm a non-resident, that doesn't apply to me, I'm an Australian citizen. But unfortunately, it does. It does apply to you. And now that this main residence exemption is coming through, it is quite likely that we could have a lot of Australian expats going to market in the next 6 months. Now, the foreign resident capital gains withholding, tax essentially states that if you're a non-resident, so yes, a non-resident for tax purposes, and you sell a property that is valued more than $750,000, the purchaser technically needs to send 12.5% of that purchase price to the ATO. Now, the reason why they introduced this was because previously a lot of foreign residents, they were selling properties, they weren't lodging a tax return to essentially encompass their last income tax liability to the ATO for the capital gain that had accrued on that taxable Australian property. And therefore, they introduced this as a way of capturing some sort of tax, and that way the ATO would get a piece of their pie that they were meant to, even though the tax return hadn't been lodged. Now, the reason why this is a bit of an issue, it's just something to be aware of, is that if we're going to be selling our properties now due to this update in the MRE legislation and our property is worth more than $750,000, it does mean that a bit of that or a portion of that sale price will be going to the ATO, and sometimes it might not need to. Now, there are ways that you can obviously get that back, and that does encompass lodging either a clearance certificate or you can vary. You can do a variation to reduce the percentage all the way down to 0%. Now, you either need to use an Australian tax agent or essentially a conveyancing solicitor to assist with that. But just bear in mind that it is likely that if you do sell your property in the next 6 months, you will see that coming through and you might have to pay that tax. But again, can get out of it, can lodge a tax return, get that tax refund or credit back. But if you're not aware of what that piece of legislation is, please do reach out and get in contact or do some research, because it is something that will capture a lot of Australian expats now if they choose to sell. It's a bit unnerving.
Well, it is, man. If you're selling a property for $1 million, which, you know, these days in Australia is not a lot of money. Pretty sad to say that, but yeah, there's a lot of properties out there worth $1 million. And we're looking at $125,000 of that $1 million. Not being paid into your account, which you may be expecting that to occur. So it's something to be mindful of. Certainly, it's the five Ps. Prior preparation prevents poor performance. I'm not going to say the other version.
I was just thinking, I think you left out some profanities then, but that's okay.
That's right. We're G-rated on this podcast on YouTube, so we've got to make sure we're doing the right thing. But
geez, are we? Okay, all right.
We've got to make sure we're in. There's little kiddies at home watching.
You might need to go back and bleep me, Brett. I think I've dropped a few naughties before. Anyway, I'll keep it just PG, yep.
PG, no F-bombs. It's something that, we've come across time and time again, people not realising this, and suddenly the sale proceeds come through and they're light on. So, as you correctly pointed out, you haven't lost the money. You just need to go through the process of claiming it back.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, there's, you either do a variation, vary it down to 0%, use an account to assist you or a conveyancing solicitor, or you get a clearance certificate. I'd be impressed if you can get a clearance certificate, because that usually only applies to citizens and normal Australian residents, but they do mention it there on the ATO. And then again, if you don't go down those two options, then they will get the tax and you just need to lodge an early tax return to get the tax refund back. But again, properties that are valued more than $750,000, that's a significant amount of capital that's just, it's gone to the ATO.
Pretty much most properties in Australia these days. I mean, look at the average price of Sydney and Melbourne alone.
That's right.
All north of $750,000. So Brisbane would be getting up there too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've already mentioned to that client previously, just be aware that this is going to come through based on, you know, your sale price. It's more than $300,000. It could go to the ATO straight away when it's not due at all. So, you know, make sure you invest in time and get the variation down to zero, or get the clearance certificate ASAP, because you need to do it, you know, a weeks before. So anyway, just be mindful of that, ladies and gentlemen. Now, moving on, talking about contributing to super. Now, every time I have a consult, this always gets raised, whether they can. I haven't read anywhere. I don't even know if it says on the ATO where it says you can't contribute to super. Obviously, there is a bit of a caveat there about what type of super fund you run, that being a self-managed super fund. Absolutely, that's a bit of a no-no, especially when you're a non-resident. But Brett, lay it straight. Can we contribute to an ordinary retail super fund whilst we're a non-resident? Can we do it?
100,000,000%.
Yeah, absolutely. And a retail super fund, ladies and gentlemen, that's, you know, that's a super fund like a HESTA account, a Host Plus account, Australian Super account. Those are retail super funds. So yes, you can make either what's called a concessional contribution or a non-concessional contribution. A concessional, Brett, just give me a bit of an example.
Concessional is before tax. So yep. While you're an Australian resident, your employer would have been contributing to your super as part of your salary package, and that is before tax. So essentially, you know, you might be on a $100,000 package plus super, which is 9.5%. So essentially what that means is your employer would be putting $9,500 per year into your super account. That is taxed on the way in at 15%, but essentially it's before tax. So essentially when they're working out your marginal tax rate, it's post your super inclusions. Non-concessional is after tax. So money you've got sitting under the mattress, in the fridge, you know, wherever it may be, and you're putting that into super after you've received it and paid tax on it, that is a non-concessional. There are different contribution caps that apply, $25,000 for concessional and 100,000 per year for non-concessional. It's amazing being based in the Gulf region. There's a whole industry here built on telling people you can't contribute to super, which I always find quite laughable. So, you know.
And I bet, what do they promote when they say you can't contribute to super? What are they selling them on over there?
Well, they're saying, you know, it's in your best interest and of course, you know, to contribute to a Isle of Man investment bond locked up for 10 years, paying 5% per annum in fees and actually getting very, very poor investment performance as well. So if you're lucky, you'll get your money back after 10 years.
Yeah, I spoke to a gentleman that was based in, I think he said Singapore, and I mentioned some initials of the company, and I got it correct, actually, first go, and he's held it for 4 years, and he says it hasn't even broke, it's gone backwards, and he says it's meant to break even soon, that's what they keep telling me. So the fact that you look at most markets, what markets have done in the last 4 years, it really should have actually been, I suppose, in the black by a fair bit by now. So
that's what I say to Australian expats in the Gulf region. I say, look at the market, look at your performance, ignore the, what's the word, I guess, you know, diatribe that gets put out by the investment managers and also the financial advisors in inverted commas. If your portfolio is not performing, there's a problem. You know, you can explain everything under the sun, but if the markets around the world are going up and yours is not, then you probably made the wrong choice.
Yeah, I think a pretty good example of that, I mean, you look at what the ASX 200 has done. I've just Googled it while we're talking. ASX 200 just this year alone has done just over 20%. So there's a pretty good reflection year to date. Obviously, that's purely reflective of just the ASX 200, not world markets, but giving you a bit of an example there. One other contribution that you've mentioned was that concessional contribution, but also that catch-up concessional contribution, which people should be aware of now. It's in effect. It started as of last financial year. So that just states that if your super balance is under 500,000, and again, if you, depending on how old you are, if you've met the active work test, if you're over 65, I should say, you know, you can technically accrue concessional contributions. You might ask yourself why, because they're pre-tax and then they get taxed on the way in. But it just means that you might be able to claim that as a tax deduction in the future, depending on your circumstances, to offset a capital gain. that's getting into it. That's pretty complex, that whole catch-up concessional contribution. So do speak to someone to get advice on that if you're trying to offset some sort of income or a capital gain that you don't want to pay.
From memory, we covered off on that. Was it episode 8, I think it was? You went into a lot of detail on how that works, everything.
I think it was. Yeah, I think I fleshed it out a bit just because it's a great type of tool that expats can use, especially when they have different assets accumulating different, I suppose, CGT rates because they're non-residents.
Taxable and non-taxable property and those sort of things.
That's right, exactly right. The next item, let's delve into it, foreign super transfer. So a foreign super transfer, you know, in terms of foreign super funds around the world, there's not many anymore, to be honest, Brett. I dare say there might only be one now, which might be just UK. The UK system. In terms of foreign supers, you can always apply for a private ruling on a foreign super fund and have the ATO provide, I suppose, their point of view on it and how it should be taxed and those sort of things. But I wanted to go into what this six-month rule is. Brett, did you want to address the first 6 months and how that's treated, and I can address the 6 months after that?
Yep, essentially, you know, when you move back to Australia and you land in the country and you tick that incoming passenger card to say resident returning, the clock starts ticking. The ATO give you virtually 6 months to be able to move any deemed foreign pensions into your Australian, you know, superannuation schemes. And not have any applicable taxes from an Australian capital gains tax point of view. If you delay, look, and it's quite a common thing. There's a lot of other things. You're trying to get kids into school and all those sort of things when repatriating. But long story short, you know, you do have a six-month time that starts when you land at Kingsford Smith or Tullamarine or whatever airport you land at to move those supers in, foreign pensions into your super in the most tax-efficient way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the 6 month sort of tax-free relief rule is quite handy, depending on the circumstances. And then any, period after that 6 months from the date in which you've arrived, that will become essentially, that will make up what's called applicable fund earnings. So how that operates is if you've got a super balance which is worth $200,000 or a foreign super fund that's worth $200,000 on the date of your arrival back to Australia, that $200,000, if it's deemed to be a foreign super fund, isn't taxable, and therefore you can make use of the after-tax contributions to get that into your Australian super. However, if it takes you, say, 18 months, 10 years to bring that foreign super fund to Australia, then that whole period up until the date you transfer it is taxable in the eyes of the ATO. And that's what's known as the applicable fund earnings. So in the event we're able to do a direct transfer from one super fund, the foreign super fund, straight into your Australian super fund, then you will need to complete, the correct form so they know, or the ATO knows, to, you know, essentially charge 15% tax on those applicable fund earnings over that period. So it's very important that that's done. Just be mindful, there is not too many super funds, I dare say any, on the markets that will accept a foreign super fund transfer. Maybe a self-managed super fund, maybe. That's going into probably the UK pension side and those sort of things. But generally speaking, people might have to look at withdrawing, depending on their circumstances, the foreign super fund, if it is deemed one, within that six-month period, and then working out ways to actively contribute it back into super, get into that concessionally taxed environment to essentially set themselves up for their retirement. So that's, foreign super transfers, applicable fund earnings, the six-month rule, it's pretty crucial. The next item that we feed into is the foreign pensions or foreign super funds, foreign pension systems. You know, this might operate with the fact that we might get a government or state pension system or pension income stream from a lot of overseas countries, depending if we're paid into it, like Social Security, those sort of things. And what I wanted to briefly touch base on here was what a UPP deduction is, or undeducted purchase price deduction. Now, a lot of the time, these types of deductions, they need to be applied for by a private ruling. But it's essentially saying that you will get this deduction, which is the portion of your pension, whether it's being paid from a foreign government, that is not taxable. It makes up the contributions that you've paid into that scheme for the last 20, 30, 40 years. And it just means that the ATO is stating that We'll give you a percentage deduction based on your annual income on that, but everything else is going to be treated as foreign sourced income. So unfortunately, it means we still will pay some sort of tax on that income stream, but we are giving you this sort of deduction. A common one I come across is the UN pension scheme, where depending on the division that you've worked for, we don't get this kind of tax-free relief that a lot of other countries get. And I'm not sure, Brett, with your clients, whether you've come across that before, but I know there's probably only two or three that do get sort of a tax-free income stream in Australia.
Yeah, look, from my own experience, it was a couple of NGOs in Myanmar. That was quite different, but it comes back to the classification of the hiring company or the organisation, I should say, that hires you. So as you say, like the UN's a massive beast and there's so many different silos inside of that. Everyone's different and depends on what the Australian government has negotiated with the different, you know, respective parties.
Yeah, that's right. And it's usually a case where you either submit a private ruling with the ATO because they'll have the legislation which they can refer to or the rulings in question, or you know, the provider will actually be able to give you that information. I think from memory, potentially the World Bank Organization might be one that is tax-free. Don't quote me on that, but I've come across that before with a client.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, so that's one that's obviously up there, and then sometimes maybe even WHO as well. But again, it depends on the vision you're working with, which is just makes it even harder.
The health organisation was one thing I was going to say as well too. I've seen, you know, different people in different departments have completely different structures as well in the World Health Organization as well too. So it's definitely something that you need to seek advice on. It's something you really need to understand the details of the moving parts.
Yeah.
Because just because you might have a friend or colleague who works for the same organization doesn't mean you'll have the same plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if they're not going to, I mean, that's a great scenario where, well, not a great scenario, I should say, but they're making an assumption based on them working for the same organisation, but they're in a different, subsidiary, and they've just made the assumption it's going to be tax-free. They've set their whole retirement up around that, the fact that they're thinking it's going to be tax-free because they haven't sought advice, and then they find, that great pension that I've been paying into for the last 25 years is now taxable. I'm losing a fair bit there to the tax men. So just do your research. If not, seek advice, seek formal advice to make sure you get that confirmation. That way you can plan ahead for that retirement. Because
I think it's a great point, because a lot of these plans are also optional as well. And it's important that Australian expats understand, are they better off paying into super or are they better off paying into their organisation plan? Because there can be very different outcomes. You know, obviously if they're paying into super, they'll be paying 15% tax on earnings and 10% on capital gains tax for assets held longer than 12 months. But once they tick that box, they hang up the boots and go into retirement mode, it's tax-free.
Yeah, correct.
There may be incentives to contribute to your organisation or some sort of government body while you're overseas, but those benefits may be traded off that when you move back to Australia to retire, you get to get paid, you know, paying tax at the marginal tax rate, as opposed to no tax at all in super. So it's always important that Australian expats understand the difference of not only the now, but also the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the reason why I've raised this undeducted purchase price, deduction, is because I have several clients that work for the UN. We've done our research and unfortunately there's no tax relief given. It's treated as foreign sourced income. They can apply for a UPP and that's it, which is unfortunate because a lot of these clients have worked for the UN for more than 10 years and now it's a case where it's planning ahead. So never make an assumption based on, your work colleague and then working in a different division.
Yep, no, great tip.
That's pretty crucial.
Good tip.
Listen, Brett, the next one I want to dive into, I want to pick your brain on, now that you've been in the UAE as well, you've been an expat for a while now, former expat again, you know, top three tips when moving overseas. And I think it's pretty important we go into it and flesh this out.
Yeah, look, I mean, people probably get expecting me to delve straight into the financial side, which I will, but not straight up. First of all, I would say those people who are considering right now to becoming an Australian expat or those who are looking at moving from one location to another are very fortunate, because there's a wealth of knowledge on online in terms of doing your homework. So, you know, probably one of the best ways to data mine information is actually in the Facebook groups. You know, there's an Australian expat Facebook group in pretty much every location that an Australian expat exists. So get in there, ask questions. Australian expats are always happy to help other expats. So get in there, use the search feature in these groups, you know, search on key, you know, whether it's accommodation, schooling and those sort of things. It's amazing how it certainly helped us decipher what would have been a monumental amount of information to absorb in a very short amount of time. So Facebook groups are great for that. And a quick plug for our Australian Expat Facebook group, you know, Australian Expat Financial Forum. You know, if you're not a member, get on there. Facebook groups would be the first one. The second one would certainly be seek advice before you go. And, you know, we applied our own advice to our situation before we went, making sure that we covered off on all the key points before we moved. You know, like we always say, Atlas doesn't own a time machine. We can't go back for clients and change what you should have done before. So it's amazing how just simple things like understanding how a move will affect you financially, you know, from a tax point of view or from a obligation point of view, if you might have HECS or student debt. Just understanding these things is probably the most important part, because there's so much misinformation out there. It's you've got enough on your plate dealing with living in a new location. Trust me, I've been here since June and I'm still getting little bits done. You know, we haven't ruled everything off just yet. What you want to try and do is get as much off your plate before you move, because it is overwhelming when you do move. You know, setting up bank accounts, visas, residency, schooling, all these things go on and on and on. So to me, you know, getting advice in a perfect world, getting advice before you go is the best thing, because you might say, I'll do it when I get over there. Trust me, when you get over there, you are overwhelmed with change and everything. The last thing you want to do is, I need to go speak to a financial planner to find out how this move's affected me. You want to do it before you go. You know, go.
Sorry, mate. And I was just going to say, I think you're spot on in terms of seek advice before you go, and because once you're over there, you're just too busy. And as well as you leave a lot of things in the wind, like you said, you're still picking up things from when you first moved over there. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people, when they head over, they forget about their tax obligations to the ATO, even declaring themselves as non-residents. I've spoken to plenty of people, which they've been overseas for 3, 5, 7, 10 years, and they go, oh, crap, I never did that last tax return. I never declared myself as a non-resident. I was like, well, what have you been doing with any bank accounts and all these other things that are still back in Australia that are still operating? You know, what's going to happen now? So don't leave it for that long and then go back and try and pick up the pieces and clean it all up. And again, fleshing out on the Facebook group. Facebook groups are a great resource. I think, obviously, human capital, it's our best resource, leveraging with other people's experiences and knowledge. But I would also say,
alert, caveat, I know what you're about to say, but yeah.
No, tread with caution in terms of what you read there regarding, you know, tax, financial advice, those sort of things in there, because people will just say what they've done. They might not be an expert, and is very likely it's not suitable for your own situation. So just, treat it as a cautionary tale that just be careful what you read in there. Obviously, getting set up, shopping, groceries, all those sort of things.
Yeah, schools, you know, exactly, brilliant. A great resource. Yeah. There's no financial implications from seeking advice that way. It's when you take tax advice or financial advice from someone who's either hasn't been caught yet and they've done it wrong, or just has, you know, is trying to help, that can lead you down the path. And I guarantee when you're, you know, at the Administrative Appeals Tribunal up against the ATO, the excuse of Fred Smith on the Facebook group told me so is not going to cut the mustard.
No, not at all. So, again, the main one there is just, you know, seek advice, tax advice, those sort of things from a professional rather than just going, oh, okay, crap. Yeah, no, I'll lodge that form on the IRS's website and I'll just declare that because that's what you've done for the last 5 years and you haven't been caught yet, so you must be right.
And quick plug for our pre-departure review. You know, we understand that not everyone needs to go through a full financial statement of advice process, which, look, in a perfect world, everyone should, because I don't think we've ever had the issue of justifying our fee versus the financial benefit of getting that advice. But we understand that people may not want to go that route. So, you know, the pre-departure review is a great tool for those looking at a lower price point. You know, I'll put a link to the show in the show notes below, but, you know, $295, you get a customized report outlining the key financial concepts you need to consider when you make that move. So, you know, like everything we do, we're just trying to educate, and, you know, just understand the ramifications. You don't have to act on it, but just knowing and being aware of those ramifications. The last tip, you know, because you asked for three, the last tip would be, you know, be humble. You know, you're not in Australia anymore. It doesn't operate, you know, the way that Australia works, any other country. So go in, don't try and fight the system, just try and navigate it, find out how to resolve the situation. You know, you can really turn yourself in knots by saying, well, in Australia we do this. You know, you just keep reminding yourself, you're not in Australia anymore, look outside. I mean, for me, I can look outside and see sand dunes, so I know we're not in Australia anymore. And that's the big thing for me is it's really helped me get through this. The timeframes that we deal with issues in Australia are quick compared to other overseas countries. So be mindful of the fact that we're not in Australia anymore. Get through the problem. You need to resolve it, but do it in a way that is cognizant of where you are, and you'll certainly save yourself a lot of stress.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you said before we even started this episode about the difference between, yeah, send an email, but you know what, you're better off just picking up, you know, your phone and making that call, because it'll get done quicker.
Not all cultures use the same communication tools that Australians use. So yes, emails are great, but you know, to me, you know, being based in Dubai, one of the most effective tools here, and you get a quick response, is using WhatsApp. You know, the amount of companies I talk to on WhatsApp is huge. You know, so find the local tool that you use, that the locals use, and use that, and adopt it, learn it, and embrace it, and you'll have a lot more stress-free environment.
Yeah, and I suppose talking about the tools you just mentioned then, do you have any issues using WhatsApp or any of those sort of applications over there when you're making calls? Or
so WhatsApp in the Middle East, well, particularly Dubai, WhatsApp as a text messaging platform is massive. You know, you can actually get account balances. You can actually do banking on WhatsApp. When it comes to WhatsApp calls, right now it is banned, like a lot of other video conferencing tools like Skype and FaceTime and those sort of things. There is talk, came out about a month ago, that there is talk that they may lift the ban on WhatsApp calls, which would be fantastic.
Would be.
Look, a lot of expats use VPNs to navigate around it. We're not advocating that, but certainly, you know, there is different ways and means in different countries of different tools. China's another example. You know, they had their own rules and regulations as well. But, you know, certainly WhatsApp for us is a very useful tool, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. And, I mean, have you had to use Facebook Messenger or anything like that before? Even Facebook Messenger video? Because I know a lot of calls can be done like that as well. Hell, as an example, when I call my parents down in Casuarina, the reception's terrible down there. So I have to call them on Facebook Messenger just to do a check-in to see how they're going, just because they have to use the Wi-Fi. And that's just, obviously, that's on the coast here. So can only imagine what it might be like overseas somewhere terrible.
Look, it's quite, you know, every country's got their own nuances. So up until recently, if you bought an iPhone in Dubai, it didn't come with FaceTime. But if you brought a phone overseas and brought it into Dubai, you can use FaceTime. So it really is mixed, and people have different scenarios, and we've heard lots of different things about some people, you know, Spotify works here, some people it doesn't. You know, so you always have those things. And we have, look, two legacy government providers of telecoms, that's Doo and Etisalat, and they set the rules. You know, there's no real competition here. You know, Virgin Mobile is here, but that's a rebranded Doo. So, you know, you always make do with it. You know, there's adjustment. You know, phone plans here are quite different. You know, you pay per, you know, you get so many text messages a month. So, and that's one of the reasons why WhatsApp is so massive here, because WhatsApp, you're using data, you're not using text messages. So very few people use text message. And it takes a while to get used to not just wanting to send a text, but using WhatsApp. But yeah, you get in with the flow with it, and you find it's a very useful tool.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, like you said, just one of those nuances when you're an Australian expat. But Brett, why don't we wind it up there for another episode of Expat Chat. Obviously, ladies and gentlemen, Merry Christmas. Have a safe and lovely Christmas and a great start to the new year. If you obviously have any further questions or anything like that, feel free to email in at info@atlaswealth.com. Brett, take it over to you.
And from over in the sandpit in Dubai, Merry Christmas to everyone as well too. Yes, we do celebrate Christmas here, so hopefully that was a bit of a misnomer that I can probably put to bed. But you know, thank you to everyone through the year for you know, following along either in video and audio. And it's something that we went quiet through the middle of the year as we were doing the relocation to Dubai. But 2020, we're going to get loud. We're going to get noisy. And you know, please encourage friends and colleagues who you think might be interested to come along with the journey with us as well too.
All right, Brett, well, we'll leave it there. Appreciate your time. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next year. And look out for that webinar on the 14th of January as well.
Merry Christmas all. And we'll look forward to touching base in the new year.
See you guys. Thank you.